You are back with The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. You know, this morning, Governor David Ige talked with us about the surprising response to the pretest travel program that rolled out over the last few days. No one really knew what to expect. Some people thought 5,000, maybe 8,000. But so far, so good. The systems in place at our airport seem to be working.
Clearly, the response has been overwhelming. You know, we had more than 10,000 visitors the first day, and it's been pretty high, you know, up 8,000 level through the weekend. So certainly the response has been terrific. You know, there was a lot of anxiety. I don't know if you got to the airport, but there are a lot of preparations involved. You know, maintaining social distancing and making sure that the queuing lines were set up appropriately, you know, being able to validate the negative test for those who are participating in the program, you know, making sure that we can process them in a timely manner, you know, making sure that the application worked. You know, we were working with the airline and travel partners to encourage visitors to complete that before getting here to the extent that they could. And, you know, the early report that I received that about 80% of them actually did complete most of that ahead of time, which did help with the lines.
Not perfect rolled out, but we're tweaking and there's some give in the system right now.
We did have some instances where people completed the pre-travel test but were unable to upload it into the system. You know, and it's a wide range of people. You know, we didn't specify the format for the documents and a lot of those kinds of details that we discovered created issues. But overall, you know, the large majority of them completed it ahead of time. And even though we had twice as many people as we really anticipated, the system responded and we were able to process the visitors, and a lot of them were residents returning in a timely manner.
So on one hand, that might mean a faster recovery, yet we want to make sure that we don't have a lot of positive COVID cases coming in here and that we can manage that and keep the numbers low?
Yeah, so it's a layered response that we put in place. We also are the only airport system in the country that have put in thermal scanners and screeners. So we are taking every passenger coming through. We are taking their temperatures. You know, we've worked with the hospitality industry to really explain to them that, you know, they have a responsibility as we reopen. We've asked them to become an extension of the public health network. We've asked them to institute, along with our airline partners, kind of a visitor education program to talk about what we want to ensure that the visitor understands is their responsibility to keeping themselves healthy and safe, as well as keeping our community safe. So, you know, we are doing videos in the hotels and on the flights over here talking about our expectation that all the visitors do their part to keep our community safe, and that's promoting the three W's: wear your mask, wash your hands, and watch your distance. You know, all of those components are part of this layered system so that we can bring travelers back and manage and contain the virus.
And what would you like to say to critics who are concerned that the rollout is different for each county? You've tried to get the response from the mayors, you know, their input on this.
Yeah, and certainly what's really important, I think, for our residents and the community at large to understand is that every county is different and the challenges in every county is different. And so, you know, the healthcare capacity on Oahu is significantly higher than the healthcare capacity on the neighbor islands. And you know, utilization and all of those kinds of determinants come into play when we're trying to decide what's the best way to move forward. So every program we discuss in general, and then clearly we're working with the mayors to just recognize that they have different kinds of constraints and that they have concerns in different areas. And we do try to accommodate what those specific needs are in every county.
as we get through this week, is there anything else that you're looking at?
You know, we are working with the counties on the what we're referring to as inter-county travel and the inter-county quarantine. Mayor Victorino always reminds me that he's the only county with three different islands, and so, you know, we're working to implement a similar pre-travel testing program for those traveling from Oahu to the neighbor island counties. And, you know, we've signed up a number of local trusted partners so that anyone wanting to travel inter-island without being subject to the quarantine can do that. We know that that's part of, you know, supporting our local community, making sure that they can travel to visit their friends and family on the neighbor islands without being subject to quarantine. That will be rolling out at the same time, and we continue to make progress in protecting the health and safety of our communities, and at the same time reviving our economy and investing in communities.
And for the folks that are in quarantine, does this pre-testing program make it more difficult to, you know, track and enforce?
We continue to work to track and enforce the quarantine. You know, the digital platform allows us to identify all of those who are in quarantine, both visitors and residents alike. You know, we are requiring completion of the health form, as you know, as part of travel. And we do request for contact information, you know, a phone number and an email address, as well as where someone will be staying as they're traveling within the state. And that's just so that we can follow up. You know, we do, and we've automated, the platform does automate the follow-up in terms of checking on the health status of people traveling so that we can be aware should they become symptomatic. And then, you know, we are definitely wanting, if someone becomes symptomatic while traveling in the islands, we want to be able to direct them to somewhere they can get tested, and then, you know, we can run the diagnostic so we know if they are infected and then help them isolate.
Is there a message that you want to underscore for residents who are traveling? Because I know a lot of the emphasis has been on visitors coming in that might be positive. But what about the visitors who might go to Vegas or another hotspot?
I continue to tell people that, you know, I would suggest that they really should only be traveling for essential purposes. If they are traveling, to check ahead, you know, I think most states and most counties now have pretty extensive websites where you can determine by county, virtually in any state, what the virus activity is and what restrictions they might have in place. I strongly encourage everyone, even if it's not a requirement to the county or the location they're traveling to wear a mask. We do know that that helps protect, you know, the people you interact with, but it does provide a layer of protection for those traveling as well. You know, and clearly the public health professionals insist that that's one of the best things that we could do here in Hawaii as well as across the country is wear a mask, and that definitely would reduce the spread of the virus.
And we will pick up the second half of our conversation with the governor a bit later. We have news of an expansion of a program to help those on food stamps that will also help farmers. You are back with the conversation. This is Catherine Cruz. You know, we talked to Governor David Ige this morning about whether we're really going to be able to spend down the billions in federal money before the end of the year. He shared with us that the state is launching a new program today to double the money for those in the food stamp program, now known as SNAP.
As you know, we've engaged private sector partners, nonprofits, and others to help implement these programs. You know, we know that they can often respond and scale up a lot faster than we can. And, you know, we continue to work with them to, you know, help accelerate distribution of funds. You know, it's one of those things, especially, unfortunately, you know, there are bad actors on this planet that look at this pandemic and is trying to figure out ways that they can defraud a government of funds. And, you know, virtually every program that we stand up is quickly inundated, And so, you know, our private sector partners are trying to manage that, try and verify the people who are seeking help are real people with real needs in a way that doesn't become burdensome, but really does recognize that we're dealing with public funds. And so, you know, I appreciate the community's patience. We are trying to process all of the requests and applications as quickly as we can. But, you know, we have asked our private sector partners to be aware that it is public funds, and we need to take appropriate action to make sure that there are real people in need.
And I understand that you plan to roll out a new program that will help the recipients of the SNAP program.
Yeah, you know, we are always looking for ways to strengthen our communities as well as support those in need. So, you know, we've been working with private sector organizations who have agreed to join us in our the Bucks Double Up Food Bucks program, and it really works with SNAP and allows SNAP recipients to have access to $1 million in matching funds to double their spending in fresh, locally produced fruits, vegetables, and proteins at participating locations statewide. So that does include many farmers markets and other markets. You know, it really ends up being a win-win-win kind of situation. You know, it supports our local farmers because, you know, we know that a lot of their market has been affected by this pandemic. It really supports the families in need because, you know, it allows them to get additional benefits, SNAP benefits that they are currently receiving. And then it really helps to keep the dollars in our local economy, which, you know, we know, especially during this pandemic, is so important. You know, that is how we can help ourselves by spending locally. So we can keep economic activity going. We want to make sure that we can get the money distributed and spent before the end of the year. And we know if it ends up being a government-run program, oftentimes it just takes a lot to get through the bureaucracies. And so, you know, working with our private sector partners has been the best way to speed up programs and get the funds distributed.
There's still a lot of talk in D.C. about another round of federal funding that's up in the air. But there is a concern that come January 1st, we're not going to have, you know, money to depend on. And do we have a plan in place, you know, whether it's helping with the testing as more visitors come here to, you know, those safety nets?
Yes, Catherine, we are definitely doing a couple things. We are aggressively advocating for state and local support. As you know, we do have a tremendous budget crisis here in the state of Hawaii. Revenues into the state has been reduced 20 to 25%. We are collecting between $1.3 and $1.5 billion less than we are spending. So, you know, we do have a budget crisis, and we are having to work through that. We are aware that the CARES money runs out at the end of the year, and we are actively planning for those activities that are being funded with CARES funds, trying to create transition plans so that we are clear about what happens on January 1st. And you know, some of those programs, the county and the state will be able to pick up. Many of them we won't be, just because we don't have the revenues to be able to support it. So we are working through and prioritizing the things that we know that we need to continue to carry on. And, you know, it's a challenge. We know that unlike the federal government, you know, we are required to have a balanced budget. And so we're just working and planning to make sure that we can have a smooth transition to to what happens after January 1st, but, you know, working hard to spend every penny of federal money that we got and then being prepared to carry on after January 1st.
Will our health department be able to handle the testing after January 1st?
You know, we have been working with the private sector to increase testing capacity. You know, the good news, Catherine, is that American Ingenuity has come through, and there are a lot less expensive and almost as accurate as that have been developed by pharmaceutical companies here in the U.S. And we are trying to get access to those tests. You know, we did receive 420,000 of the Abbott Binax antigen tests that we'll be getting now through every week to the end of the year, and looking at how best to deploy it. It's not as accurate as a PCR test, but it does provide a low-cost alternative. It costs less than $10 per test. So, you know, we are working through the priorities of who we believe should be tested on a regular basis. Obviously, nursing homes and long-term care facilities are priorities. Jails and prisons are a priority. And then, you know, just public schools and schools in general, and what kind of testing program makes sense so that we can get students back to in-person learning. We do know that online learning at least allows public education to continue, but we do know that there are some students that are having a difficult time, and we know that so much of the learning is interacting with other students that we need to get back to in-person learning in a safe and healthy way.
You mentioned care homes, elderly homes, and I know everybody's, you know, hearts go out to the folks on the Big Island where, you know, we've had the situation there at the Veterans Home and the Life Care Center. I just read in the Generations magazine that Mrs. Ige's mother is in a home, and, you know, your mother's in a home as well, and you haven't been able to see them since March. That must be hard.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is really what makes it difficult during this pandemic. And you know, technology is helpful to a certain extent, but it's really not the same as being able to visit, you know, being able to hold my mom's hand and talk to her. And I know that in some instances she recognizes and remembers who I am, and in some instances she don't. And you know, having to go through a video conference just is not the same. But by the same token, I think all of us recognize that we want to keep our parents safe. And, you know, we are hopeful that there will be a vaccine and that we can get back to a more regular interaction with those in our nursing facilities. But we are all committed to keeping them healthy and safe as a priority.
And how are your children doing? Because I know when we last talked, you were concerned for them. You've got one that's a nurse and a couple that were in a hot spot at the time.
Yeah, they are all excited about the pre-travel testing program because, you know, we have been talking about the holidays and trying to think about whether it would be possible for them to come home for the holidays. You know, it's funny, when we first announced the pre-travel testing program, my daughter in Mount Vernon, Washington State, sent me a screenshot of CVS pulling up, and she, you know, sent me an emoji with tears and a frown because there were no facilities in Washington State that CVS had. And so she was happy when I told her we now have 17 trusted partners to get tested, and we have 60 more that have applied to become tested partners. So, you know, we're trying to build out the network to ensure that people who want to travel to the islands can get access to a test, you know, so that we can invite them back in this layered response to health and safety in our community.
We have been talking to Governor David Ige about coping during these COVID times. You can look for more details on the Double Bucks SNAP program later today.